New York, it's the Gary Null Show. Come on home, baby. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you. Today, we're going to learn about why walnuts are so important in our diet. We're also going to take a look at cannabis oil extract and the dramatic impact it has on brain cancer. We'll also look at why high-fat diets can delay aging and low-fat diets actually speed them up. We'll also take a look from the Asian Pacific Journal of Clinical Nutrition about meditation growing your brain in just 8 weeks, and a lot more on health and healing. Then we have from our environmental segment, we're going to look at, well, instead of the environment, public health, that new research suggests that psychiatric interventions, like admissions to a mental facility, are supposed to protect people. They actually increase suicide risk. So every time you put someone in a psychiatric institution, you increase their rate. How'd that happen? We'll show you. Also from The Guardian, a new study shows that if you want to feed the homeless, be prepared to pay the government for the privilege. And contaminated GM crops, they cannot be contained, according to a new paper. And Princeton University has a new report out, and it says in this new study that American democracy no longer exists. Quote, what really rules, researchers Martin Gillens and Benjamin Page argue, over the past few decades, America's political system has slowly transformed from a democracy into an oligarchy where wealthy elites wield most power. Well, so we'll talk about that. And we have a lot more. And is defiance a medical condition? Now, this is an interesting study from Psychology Today, Eric Mizell. We'll take a look at it. Because I believe that none of what we exhibit in the normal course of living is a mental condition. It may be an attitudinal condition, an emotional condition. It's not a medical condition. But they're saying, no, these are medical conditions, which means that under the new Children's Mental Health Initiative, that virtually all children in America are to be given mental health screening tests. This is already going on right now. And once you have those screening tests, you can then help the children that have clearly defined mental conditions, such as, well, I'll just give you one of them. And this is a, quote, symptom of mental disorders. All you have to get is four different one of these, and then you're diagnosed. If you lose your temper, if you argue with your parents, if you defy your parents' rules, if you're spiteful, if you're resentful, any of those, you've got mental disorder, and you're going to be medicated and diagnosed. Then also, how is it so many women today believe that they have, well, they have a sexual problem? Could it be, according to Ellen Lamb, that you have bought into the idea that you have a problem because so-called experts have told you you have a problem? We're going to show you who these experts are, the organizations they work for, and how Big Pharma is behind it all. We have a lot to share. Let's begin. We all know that walnuts are good and that we should be having them on a regular basis. Now, there are several ways of having walnuts. Of course, just eat good, organic, raw walnuts. But you can also have them as a sprouted walnut butter, which is not actually a butter in the sense of a dairy butter, but it's creamy. They simply take the sprouts of the sprouted walnuts, as they do the sprouted almonds and sunflower seeds and pumpkin seeds, and they blend them. So they're excellent. It's very good for people who have digestive problems. And so if you have some of the itises, the nut butters are much better than the nuts. Sunflower seed butter, chia seed butter, hemp seed butter, macadamia, with some of the best. These are all good. But walnuts stands out and above all the rest. Why? According to the latest study in the Peer Review Journal of Medicinal Food, quote, "For years, the United States government has been on a crusade against fat, and I think it's been to our detriment. Walnuts are a perfect example. While they are high in fat, their fat does not drive prostate cancer growth. In fact, walnuts do just the opposite when fed to mice." This was done at the University of California, Davis, and they found that the walnut oil and walnuts were great for slowing prostate cancer growth and especially reducing the level of the hormone IGF-1, which has been previously implicated in both prostate and breast cancer. So, quote, "We've showed that it's not the omega-3s by themselves. It could be a combination of the omega-3s with whatever else is in the walnut oil. It's becoming increasingly clear in nutrition that it's never going to be just one thing. It's always a combination." They're right. I found over 100 studies on the healing benefits of walnuts. So, have your walnuts. Throw a handful into your shake in the morning. Now, some good news from University of St. George's in London. Cannabis oil extract can have dramatic positive effect on brain cancer. Experts have shown that when certain parts of cannabis oil are used to treat cancer tumors alongside other therapies, the growth can virtually disappear, the brain cancer growth. The new research by specialists at St. George's University in London studied the treatment of brain cancer tumors in the laboratory and discovered that the most effective treatment was to combine active chemical components of the cannabis plant, what are called cannabinoids, and which made a tremendous difference. Now, this is about the 7th article I've seen on cannabis oil and brain cancer. There's also an article published in the Molecular Cancer Therapeutics Journal on this very topic. And yet the average physician is not using it. The average oncologist is not using it. Now the question is, why? Well, let's just speculate a hypothesis, which is subjective. On the one hand, they may simply not know the literature, which is a shame on them since that's what they're specialized to do. They're supposed to know everything about effective treatments for cancer. But then the idea is, are they biased because of their position on marijuana? But this is not marijuana. This is an oil that's extracted from the hemp. So therefore, it's not the same. And yet it may be biasing them. They may have fear. That's one possibility. Another is that oncology is the only branch of medicine where the oncologist is allowed to buy medicine at cost and to them, let's say $5,000, and then charge, let's say $12,000, and keep the spread $7,000 per month per patient. And let's say you're the average oncologist, so you see 100 patients. Well, that's $700,000 a month that you're making. All right, that's $8 million a year, net profit. Now, that does not include the other cost that you charge. That's just the cost of the drug. That doesn't include hospitalization, radiation, or any other, your office visits. So could we imagine the possibility that the high cost of chemotherapy and the highly incentivized field of buying it and selling it to the patient may limit their knowledge or awareness or interest in anything that's not purchasable? They can't make a profit on it. It's very inexpensive and it's non-toxic. You don't get any of the toxic side effects. I remember inviting Nathan Pritikin back in 1979 to be a guest speaker at one of the annual retreats that I did, and this one was at the Concord Hotel. And we would pack the place, about 1,600 guests, and we had a ball. Generally, it was in the summertime, so they could golf or swim. We'd do running clinics, and all day long we'd have clinics. And the hotel, as was true also the Homowack and Brown's and Grossinger's, they would always give us a vegetarian menu, and it was kosher. All of them are kosher up there. So we had a large group of Orthodox and non-Orthodox Jewish people in the audience who would come to these retreats. It was a lot of fun. And I miss it because it was one of those remarkable times where we were so many wonderful people. And I would have about 10 to 12 guest speakers. Linus Pauling, all the top people in the world in health would always come. This was the first time I'd ever met in person Nathan Pritikin of the Pritikin low-fat diet. He believed in 10%. The first thing he saw when he saw the diet I had lined up, he said, well, this is not a 10% diet. I said, this is not your retreat, Nathan. I said, this is for people who are interested in a transition to a healthier lifestyle. So they're learning yoga and meditation and water aerobics and cooking classes. And they can be, look, there are plenty of items here that are low fat. And he was just an angry man. You just couldn't have a conversation with him. He didn't listen, and he didn't like to hear what people were saying. He just wanted to talk at you. And I said to him at the time, I said, take a careful look at people around the world who have a high-fat diet, but it's a natural type of fat. It's not the type of fat of trans fatty acids or the type of highly polyunsaturated omega-6 fatty acids we consume in, like, soy oil and cottonseed oil and peanut oil and corn oil that we have in the United States. And I gave him an example. I said, look at avocados and walnuts and macadamia nuts, high in fat, but they're good fats. They're healthy. Anyhow, he said, doesn't matter what kind of fat. And I said, well, take a look in the mirror. And I said, how healthy do you think you look? And he didn't look healthy, and he wasn't healthy, and he didn't live a long life. But for a period of time, for about 5 to 10 years, he was in that spotlight, and everyone wanted on the low-fat Pritikin program, and it was successful. Well, unfortunately, when you are a monotheistic thinker, you only take one part of a puzzle and you try to make it the whole puzzle. And I've seen too many people do this in my life. A low-fat diet, a very low-fat diet, is not a healthy diet. It is a dangerous diet. I've told many of the raw food enthusiasts who think that this is just the newest wonder, but it isn't. But parts of it are. Therefore, you have to separate out that which works, that which doesn't work. Raw is very good for about 60% of the diet for most people. But then a lot of things cannot be fully digested if they're raw, like asparagus, broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, the pumpkins, the gourds. You can't be eating those things raw, even if you sprout them, and not all things are good sprouted. So there's just been too much of a radicalized approach to the diet that is not scientifically or common sense based. Here's the latest on the amount of fat in the diet. This is from Prevent Disease. Quote, new Danish-led research suggests that brain's aging can be postponed through high-fat diets. In the long term, this opens up the possibility of treatment of children suffering from premature aging and patients with Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. The research project is headed by the Center for Healthy Aging, University of Copenhagen, and the National Institutes of Health. Now, what are they looking at? You're looking at, quote, nuts, avocados, coconuts, olive oils, and non-pasteurized hard cheeses, and organic fatty fish, if you can find them in unpolluted waters. So that's the kind of eating that we've been advocating for a long time. The healthy oils, especially the flaxseed oil and the coconut oils. So it helps our brain, so if you want to have a brain that's healthier longer, make sure you're not on a really low-fat diet. A no-sugar diet, yes. The no-processed carbohydrate diet, yes. The no-animal protein diet, yes. We don't need any animal proteins whatsoever. Now, a new study shows that meditation can grow your brain in just 8 weeks. Quote, a team of researchers led by Dr. Lazar, a neurologist instructor at Harvard's medical school, have discovered that meditating for just 8 weeks can fuel the gray matter in the hippocampus and promote brain growth. More specifically, the practice of meditation can spark measurable changes in brain regions associated with memory, sense of smell, empathy, and stress. So that's good news, and that was done at Harvard Medical School. Quote from the scientist led this, although the practice of meditation is associated with a sense of peacefulness and physical relaxation, practitioners have long claimed that meditation also provides cognitive and psychological benefits that persist throughout a day. This study demonstrates that changing the in-brain structure may underlie some of this reported improvements, and that people are not just feeling better because they're spending time relaxing. Quote, it is fascinating to watch the brain's biochemistry. By practicing meditation, we can play an active role in changing the brain and can increase our well-being and quality of life. Good for them. And finally, magnesium cuts diabetes risk. From Tufts University, quote, getting enough magnesium in the diet can reduce the risk of diabetes, especially for those who are already showing signs of heading that way. A doctor, Adela Hubri, found that healthy people with the highest magnesium intakes were 37% less likely to develop high blood sugar or excess circulating insulin, common precursors to diabetes. And it was published in the peer-reviewed journal Diabetes Care. Just a thought on that. Last Tuesday evening, beginning our diabetes, high blood pressure, obesity, health support group, which is doing really well, I always ask people, what has changed in the last week? Because they're keeping daily diaries. And one person named Larry, who sits in the front row, said that for the first time in his adult life, I'm guessing this is maybe 30 years, his doctor said this last week he no longer has a diagnosis of diabetes, which he's had his whole adult life, with all kinds of problems with health because of it. And he said that he is so happy that he didn't believe it was possible. Now he sees it's possible. Now he's even more motivated. So he no longer has a diagnosis of diabetes. There was also a gentleman there with his wife, and he said that his wife had a fasting blood sugar level this year of 700. Well, you're at 700, you're in a very serious keto state, and you're lucky to be alive. It's now at 95. That's 600-point drop in blood sugar. So some remarkable things can happen when you go through both lifestyle and behavior modification. And just so we're clear, there's no one single magic bullet. And all of the counseling that I do in all the workshops, over 44 clinical studies with over 40,000 people, they always start with a basis of behavior modification. And why is that important? Because I've seen too many times where you can give the best possible protocol to someone, but if they're not in the right mindset, if they're really not positive, if they're not empowered by their capacity to make reasonable judgments, then they're not going to follow up on it. But if you start by laying a foundation where the beliefs of the person are improved to where they are really empowered and feel good and are happy, they're far more motivated to stick with the protocol. Now, a question that I'm going to raise, and this is from Psychology Today, Dr. Eric Mizell. Quote, is defiance a medical condition? This is from our public health segment. In real medicine, you use symptoms to help you discern a cause, which then helps you pick a treatment. You take fever, fatigue, swelling, and so on as indicators of, say, a particular virus, and then you attempt to deal with the virus. If you can't discern the cause, or if you can't decide between two or more causes, you run more tests, and while you're trying to identify the cause, you do things you know are likely to help relieve the symptoms. In the meantime, as you seriously look for the cause, you work to reduce the pain or bring down the fever. You're reducing the pain and bringing down the fever while you continue to investigate what is actually causing the fever and pain. You do not focus all of your efforts on reducing the pain or on bringing down the fever. You continue your investigations. You're trying to figure out what is going on. Your job isn't merely to treat symptoms. One of our neighbors recently suffered from a terrible stomach pains. For a long time, on the order of 2 months, no conclusive diagnosis could be reached among the four contenders vying for the cause of her affliction. Finally, it was conclusively determined that it was cancer located in a certain stomach valve. Treatment began immediately. All along, she was being given relief of her symptoms, relief for the pain, help with her inability to keep food down, while the cause was being determined. Treatment for the actual affliction could only commence once it was identified. That is how medicine works. In the pseudo-medical specialty of children's mental health, something very different goes on. There you take the report of a child's behavior, for example, that little Johnny pulled on the braids of the little girl sitting in front of him. And for no reason that you can justify, you call that a symptom of a mental disorder. You collect several of these symptoms of mental disorders, often four is enough, and you attach a proverbial label to that symptom picture. The label might sound like oppositional defiance disorder. Once that name is announced, chemicals are provided. Zero interest is shown in what is causing the behavior. Zero interest is shown in whether the behavior reflects something biologically going on, something psychological going on, or something situationally going on. This is not medicine, no matter how many white coats are in evidence. A child who loses his temper, argues with his parents, defies his parents' rules, and is spiteful and resentful is given, based on these four symptoms, the pseudo-medical-sounding label of oppositional defiance disorder, and put on chemicals, drugs, whose job is to make him more obedient. This is not medicine. This is behavior control instituted to make the lives of adults easier. Why not ask little Jimmy why he's angry or resentful? Is it such a preposterous approach? Why not step back and see if his family is in chaos? Why not look at his life and not just his symptoms? Why presume that a child arguing with his parents is caused by some impossible-to-find medical condition? Isn't it more likely, by a thousandfold, that he is angry with them? Why don't we want little Johnny to act out? We want him to act normal, right? But we do not believe that it is causeless, and we do not really believe that it is the result of medical condition. We must test for genuine organic problems like brain damage or neurological damage that can cause explosive rage, but in the absence of such biological challenges, we are obliged to presume that little Johnny has everyday human reasons for his anger. Once you rule out brain damage and other possible biological causes of rage, your next step should not be to posit a made-up, invisible medical condition, but rather to treat little Johnny like a human being with everyday human reasons for his anger and his resentment. And one fact alone should prove the absurdity of considering these behaviors as pseudo-medical mental disorders. Imagine for a second that I said to you that may not be able to see my symptoms of your cancer was proof that you had cancer. Imagine that I said to you that my not being able to see a Bokken Brown on an x-ray was proof that you had a Bokken Brown. You would find these pretty odd assertions. What is fascinating is that mental health service providers are warned that they may not get the witness in any of these oppositional behaviors because a child with this disorder is likely not to demonstrate any defiance except with his parents and teachers. Unlike in real medicine, where the sore is visible both at home and in the examining room with the behaviors associated with oppositional defiance disorder, those behaviors are likely only observable when little Johnny is actually angry, namely at school and at home. It is absurd but true that an indicator that you have the mental disorder of oppositional defiance disorder is that you do not display any symptoms or signs talking with anyone else at only in one environment. Seriously. Shouldn't the fact that little Johnny is only angry around his parents suggest that little Johnny is angry with his parents? And it goes on from there. I commend you for writing what is obvious, because this profession of psychology, which dwarfs in size the profession of psychiatry, for too long has felt as if it were a handmaiden to psychiatry. Your PhDs, not MDs, and historically we're not allowed to use prescription medication. So you had to work with the idea of you had someone who had a problem, behavioral problem, emotional problem, situational problem, family problem, and you work to try to find the solution. But for decades now, even psychologists have accepted that every problem of every kid is a brain chemical imbalance. You label bipolar, you labeled even an infant's bipolar. If a baby cries and then laughs, they're bipolar. The entire field today of psychiatry is one giant fraud when it relies upon a completely flawed, completely fraudulent notion that everyone has, based upon symptoms, a brain chemical imbalance. The brain chemical imbalance is not scientifically valid. There is not a single study in the world literature that proves it. There's never been a study that proves it. And I think it's time that all psychologists, all therapists, and all psychiatrists throw this in the garbage where it belongs and work with people as if they're dealing with real-life human issues. One last thing on this. This is an article, Sex Cures in the Drug Industry. The Partnership Between Sexologists and the Drug Companies is Full of Conflicts of Interest, by Ellen Lan. Quote, many women report losing their desire for sex, some temporarily, some permanently. Is this a relationship problem, a normal aspect of life changes, or as the pharmaceutical industry maintains, an unmet medical need? That was the question under consideration for 2 days of meetings during which the Food and Drug Administration heard from sexual medical experts and women with sexual complaints. It was a meeting of sedate scientific standards, and months of public relations campaigning had preceded it. The International Society for the Study of Women's Sexual Health, which, by the way, is largely funded by the pharmaceutical industry, had joined with Sprout Pharmaceuticals and other companies with skin in the game to develop two slick campaigns. Womendeserve.org, and which argue that the FDA's failure to approve a drug to treat women's sexual problems was sexist. After all, men have Viagra and its various relatives. The patients told stories of their frustration, distress, but they appeared to have been coached to demand drug solutions. They acknowledged that their travel expenses to the meeting had been paid, wearing matching green scarves and buttons proclaiming women's deserve. The women described the mixed results and side effects of their various off-label treatments, including implanted testosterone pellets, testosterone gels, and antidepressants. They insist they had no non-medical problems. Their desire had been simply, quote, turned off like a light switch. Okay, and the bottom line was that almost all the experts were associated with the pharmaceutical industry, wanting to first make one more condition in women. They already made pregnancy, and they made menopause medical conditions. They made being a child a medical condition. So why not make a loss of sexual desire a medical problem? Therefore, if it can be medicalized, it can then be put into all the Medicaid and the Medicare computers and doctors' code books. And therefore, when you see your doctor, the insurance companies will pay for it. But of course, that's based upon a drug, a very expensive drug that you'll get. Will the drug actually improve your libido? No. Is there any drug known to improve your libido? No. Why? It's simple. Because sexual desire comes from the brain, which comes from the mind, which comes from fantasy, and it comes from the desires. Frequently, if our desires are repressed, if we're living through times where we don't feel like we are sexy or want to engage on an intimate level, that has nothing to do with the brain chemical imbalance. That has to do with an attitudinal factor. But don't look at it as a real-life situation that all people have gone through throughout all of time. Instead, medicalize it. Therefore, you can commodify it, commercialize it, corporatize it, And then you'll have all these women on television saying, I used to have no desire, but now I took this antidepressant, or I took this gel cream at only $700 a month, and I just feel horny all the time. We have seen this so many times. Stop trusting that the FDA, its expert panel, has anything to do with the reality of our needs. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. To welcome all of you, I'm Gary Nall. Just two things before we look at some of the issues, and I'm going to have a little talk back here in a moment at 888-874-4888. This is from the latest research, Bob Wypond at Alternet. Quote, research suggests that psychiatric interventions like admission to a mental facility could increase suicide risk. Quote, one of the most provocative studies of suicide ever done was published in the current issue of the Journal of Social Psychiatry and Psychiatric Epidemiology. It appeared shortly after Robin Williams' suicide and shortly before the World Health Organization's World Suicide Prevention Day. Both of these events received widespread media attention, but this study was not reported by any media that I've seen. And the study looked at a broad population and identified some closely related, easily modified factors in people's lives that were linked to being, are you ready for this? 6 times, 28 times, or 44 times more likely to commit suicide. That's 4,400% more likely to commit suicide. It's important to pause on those moments, on those numbers for a moment. In the world of suicide prevention statistics, they are truly staggering. What other risk factors associated with people being 4,400% more likely to kill themselves? There aren't any. Not even close. So that's why this year's U.S. Preventive Services Task Force once again recommended against conducting a suicide screening test. They're just not reliable. That's why the most sage advice that the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention's website, quote, warning signs can provide us with is to check with your loved ones and who are looking to kill themselves or calling people to say goodbye. And that's also why it's all the more curious that this new study has gone largely unreported. Most discoveries of potential suicide risk factors, no matter how seemingly insignificant they are, ignite widespread discussion. For example, in June, NBC and Reuters and Associated Press and NPR and USA Today, Bloomberg and the Washington Post and many other media headlined a study that loosely linked USDA's FDA warnings on antidepressants to a relatively 30% increase, absolute increase in occurrence in drug poisonings, to a tentative proxy of suicide attempts. Now, none of those studies proved the FDA warnings clouds or restless nights cause suicide, but the mere notion that they might was widely considered to be worthy of discussion. Yet, in this more recent study, the researchers found increases in the rates of suicide climbing exponentially up to 4,400%. So what were those dramatic increases linked to? University of Copenhagen researchers led a nationwide study in Denmark comparing individuals who died from suicide to match controls between 1996-2009. They then graded the type of psychiatric treatment people had experienced within 1 year of their suicide on a scale which included no treatment, psychiatrically medicated, contact with outpatient psychiatric services, entrance to a psychiatric emergency room, admission, voluntary, involuntary, into psychiatric hospitals. And what did they find? You were far more likely to commit suicide if you were admitted to a psychiatric hospital. Guo. Quote, psychiatric admission to the preceding year was highly associated with the risk of dying from suicide. Furthermore, even individuals who had been in contact with psychiatric treatment but had not been admitted are at a highly increased risk of suicide. So, it's significant. So, there you have it. One more idea that no one's challenging and they should. The very notion that we treat people with psychiatric disorders by putting them in mental hospitals or jails means they're far more likely, 4,400% more likely to commit suicide. And yet the media didn't touch that at all because it would show the complete bankruptcy of our current psychiatric or mental health paradigm. And it is a completely failed paradigm. I'm Gary Nall, and I'm going to give you one more thing I thought was important. Princeton University, from Brendan James, quote, a new study from Princeton spells bad news for American democracy, namely that it no longer exists. Asking who really rules, researchers Martin Gillens and Benjamin I. Page argue that over the past few decades, America's political system has slowly transformed from a democracy into an oligarchy where wealthy elites wield most power. Using data from over 1,800 different policy initiatives from 1981 to 2002, the two concluded that rich, well-connected individuals in the political scene now steer the direction of the country, regardless of or even against the will of the majority of voters. Quote, the central point that emerges from our research is that economic elites and organized groups representing business interests have substantial independent impacts on U.S. government policy, while mass-based interest groups and average citizens have little or no independent influence. Well, okay, they did their study. A lot of us have known that for a long time. Now, if you're listening around the world, as we have people listening, we're going to do something a little unusual, and that is we have one of our sister stations, WBAI New York, has just concluded a week ago a five-week and extended fund drive, raising somewhere in the neighborhood of $300,000. How much that's actually net-net, who knows. Just in 2001, in 1 2-week period, we raised $1,200,000, and it was 90% fulfilled. Now, today, we are a much smaller station, WBAI is, and far fewer listeners, far older listeners, average age 70. And the station is simply trying to survive. The trouble is, if it doesn't get out all of its premiums, then the next drive that will be coming in another month will have even less people supporting it. There are people, volunteers, and others who are doing a really yeoman's job to try to help. But at the end of the day, it's simple math. If you don't have enough listeners, then even really good premiums don't get the support they need. As a result, when the money comes in, it goes into a general fund. I'm opposed to that, but that's the way it works. And as a result, the landlord, the transmitter tower, the salaries, the utilities, the rent get paid first. Whatever's left then goes towards premiums. In the ideal situation, and historically, there's been enough money to take care of all the bills. Now, it didn't mean that historically all the things got done in the right way. There have been problems with premiums, with the exception of one management team, as long as I've been on BAI, because the listeners were never considered as important as other issues. Now, of course, there's no choice. We either have to honor the audience or we cease and the national office takes over the station. It's that simple. So in order to help it, when the station manager asked, what could we do? I came up with some creative ideas and I'll be implementing some of those ideas in the near future. We're not going to go back immediately into another fund drive, though this Wednesday and Thursday, all day from 9 until evening, there will be preemptions of all shows so that the National Archives can do their show. I will still be broadcasting, but you'll have to go to the telephone if you listen on the radio. On Wednesday and Thursday, you can call a phone number or go on the internet if you use the internet, and you can go to progressiveradionetwork.com and hear me, or on a telephone. That number is 712-432-7231, 712-432-7231. So here is one of the things that they ask, would I do it? I had, trust me, my schedule is such that I didn't want to, but we really have no choice. We have to try to raise money. So I decided to do something fun, creative, and that would actually help the people. And this, I guarantee you will get your premium. I can't guarantee when or if you'll get the premiums that just happen, because I have no control whatsoever over the funds the station gets, how much they get, and how they allocate it. I'm sure that in a perfect world, they would allocate it so everyone gets everything, but it's just not happening. And I've sent multiple emails and phones, none of which have been returned, to ask when are the premiums coming. So here's a premium you will get, and it's a premium that many of you really need. For 2 weeks in January, starting on the second Sunday in January, when the winter vortex will be in full force with bitter colds and snows. By the way, the vortex hasn't hit us yet. It'll hit us later this week, and then you'll get a double dip with a harder one coming, harsher, next week. Now, there's one right behind it. And then we're going to have probably one of the worst winters in history. But for the people who are on this trip, you're going to be in a very warm place, probably in about 75 to 80 degrees. And here's what's going to happen. We're going to emphasize de-stressing, because people are stressed to the max. So getting people to de-stress, sitting on a beach doing meditation, petting animals, quality time watching butterflies, just being alone in nature to the degree you want. Cleansing and detoxifying, the most powerful cleansing, delicious, nutritious juices. Personal counseling. For those of you who need some counseling, you're going to get it. Lectures, exercise, power walking, power biking, gym workouts, water aerobics, cooking classes, juicing classes, raw food, gourmet food classes, plate presentation classes. By the way, I'm also looking for some people who can do typing. You actually get paid for this, because I'm on schedule to get my next cookbook done. It's done, and I just got to get the recipes typed up and off to the publisher. If you like the first cookbook I did this past year, which, by the way, won 4 major awards and was a bestseller, this one's even better. So I've been working at night in the kitchens to knock out I get 300 great dishes. Anyhow, you'll call 646-926-5422 if you want to take a week or two and do some typing. But anyhow, you're going to get cooking classes. And also, I like to show people how to actually plate a dish. What do I mean by plate a dish? It means, how do you set up the dish? How do you decorate it? So it just doesn't look like a blob of brown rice and some beans put on a plate, but really make it look like a piece of artwork. So I'll be showing what is called food stylizing to make it look beautiful. And then how to grow sprouts, how to grow your own wheatgrass, how to do wheatgrass juice therapy, all this, and the greatest tasting, most original, delicious dishes imaginable every day, from morning till night, for 1 week. It's a contribution of $2,000. Now, normally something like this would run at least $6,000. In fact, I spoke with Gabriel Cousins. I spoke with some people over the last week to find out what's going on around America. I was just curious. And no one believes you could do this for $2,000. And why $2,000? Because I heard that people were calling in and responding to watching a popular radio show and having a lunch. And that was it for $2,000. Well, imagine everything I just mentioned for $2,000. It's a fundraiser for the station. And so many wonderful people from around the United States are flying in to donate their time to help. So it will pay bills, and that's its meaning. Now, I'm going to play you just a few unrehearsed, uncoached comments of people who, on the last day there, were asked, would you like to give your opinion? Okay. And here's what some of them had to say, so you can hear some of the people from this audience in our last fund drive, which was very successful, made thousands of dollars for the station. And by the way, just before I get to that, I've been, to say overwhelmed, thousands of calls of people who could not come to the solar, how to survive a solar sport storm with a group, with other individuals. And I'm going to do one more, and that's it. That's no more. I can't do any more. This Sunday at 2 o'clock. It's free. It's public service. But at noon, I'm also doing a homesteading project. For those who would like to do homesteading, it's at noon. It's homesteading. Again, it's free. It's a public service to show people the best ways of doing homestead, where to do the homestead. There are thousands of groups out there. And you can call 646-926-5422 if you want to come to either one of those. And those are public services. Now, here are some testimonies of people that what they got from the last retreat that we did, which was also a fundraiser for this station.
I came here to reboot my life, to get back on track, because I think I'd fallen off a little bit. So as soon as you drive up, I mean, before you even put your feet on the property, you feel a sense of peace and you feel yourself de-stressing. And when you finally sit down to a meal, you really feel good. It's all vegetarian. It's exquisite food. You eat and you enjoy and you savor every bite. I don't usually eat in silence. This has been a wonderful, wonderful way of slowing down and just enjoying. It's a loving environment. Everyone is kind. And you get to share responsibilities. You chat with people. You get to learn things. And Gary is just a tremendous, tremendous mentor. And this experience has changed my life. It really has. The energy work that he does is absolutely amazing. I didn't tell him one single thing about me, and yet when he did the energy work on me, he targeted exactly where my trouble spots were, immediately went right to them. After that, I mean, I haven't had the aches and pains I had. They're mysteriously gone. I'm able to walk more, run more. I mean, I wasn't doing very much. I was doing some exercise, but not like this. I'm running all over the place, up and down the stairs. This has been a tremendous, tremendous experience that I just am so grateful and so happy that I came. The lectures have been tremendous, and that's reset some things in me and made me now take a look at myself, take a look at my life and all the things I'm doing and not doing. I think that looking at yourself and deciding to make changes right there on the spot, I decided that there were some things I was going to immediately change. So this has been an experience that will certainly, without a doubt, turn my life around. And I thank you, Gary, and I thank everybody here. This has been a wonderful, wonderful experience.
I came here with the intention of taking a good look at my life. So this was a chance for me to take what I've already built in my life, and I've been listening to Gary for about 15 years, and take everything that I've already put together, take some very hard looks at things that weren't working in my life and make the commitments to let them go, to make space for what I believe I want. And so it's been a very intensely personal journey for me. And the fun thing about it is that I've met some people along the way here that I've had conversations that I don't usually get to have with. I'm someone who really likes very deep conversations on a wide array of topics, spiritual, emotional, political, etc. And I've had that opportunity here. There's an opportunity to reflect on what changes I want to make in my life. I'm fairly clear on it at the moment. I've had a big space of time to take a look at what my new directions are. And at core, I'd say the most important thing is I haven't felt this happy for a long time. Things were functioning, but I wasn't enjoying them. And now I get the sense I can bring the joy that was central to me back into my life. And I'm happy for that.
This experience has been absolutely magical for me. I've been listening to Gary Noll on the radio for about a year and a half. Eventually, I got an opportunity to come to this retreat, and it's been amazing. There's certain questions in my life that have been answered. There's a joyful energy that I have that I can't wait to take with me from the retreat and spread it to everyone I know and everyone I come in contact with. there's no way I can thank Gary enough for this opportunity.
I'm very grateful to have had the opportunity to come here. I believe I was meant to come here. Gary's lectures have been very helpful, and I'm very inspired. And I know I'm going in a completely different career change. And the yoga, the meditation, everything has just been wonderful. The food is outstanding. The grounds are beautiful. And I'm very happy to have had this opportunity.
Hello, my name is MJ, and I came here bringing a friend, both of us ill, and to get a new perspective, to heal, to be at one with nature in a gorgeous place. I've been listening to Gary's lectures for years and appreciate the one-on-one energy of everybody here. This experience has allowed me to make decisions I've been mulling over and given me courage. I would hope that everybody has such an experience.
I came down to Gary's villa to train some people as far as physical training and some water training as well. But like all the other retreats of Gary's, you just get overwhelmed with the surroundings and the lake, the trees, the animals. I've been here for 2 weeks now, and I think Gary's going to have to get security to get me out of here. But this is always a great experience. The weather's been great.
I have to say that this has to be one of the most bucolic, one of the most healing.
Those are just some of the individuals that, and there are over 100 who have given testimonials in the last year. A lot of people's conditions, in my opinion, are based upon unresolved anger issues, internal rage. You have to be able to listen to life in a neutral place and decide how much of your thoughts, actions, and behavior are based upon conditioning. What I try to do at these retreats is get people to look at life differently. That means you have to have some quiet. Otherwise, the mind is constantly rushing, constantly making judgments, and constantly angry. Now, even though we can be angry, and justifiably so, that becomes rage, and then rage becomes disease. You show me someone who walks around angry at the world, I'll show you someone who's processing disease 24/7. So it's not will they end up with their disease, it's just when and to what degree and which one. So what I try to do is break that cycle. So a person is no longer stressed, no longer always trying to fight yesterday's battles, but they're simply present in the moment they're in and trying to make positive, joyful, spiritual choices. That is the key. And by surrounding people with wonderful animals, little, this time there's going to be baby goats and lambs and kissing birds that you just sit there and get kissed all day by birds and things that just make you smile. You know, just smile at life, because we sure enough got enough sour-faced people that just walk around bitter and angry and projecting. When you do that, you're lighting up that entirely inflammatory system and you're killing yourself. So if you believe that you're worth it, that you believe you want a second chance at life, this will be meaningful for you. I have Luann Panessi on the line. Hi, Luann.
Hi, Gary.
Luann is the one who screens people because it's not for everyone, but for people who do believe that this could make a difference in their life, give us your perspective. We only have a minute, and then give the phone number so people can call you.
Well, sure, Gary. We have so many different types of people from all over the world in your audience, and I've heard nothing. And most of the people coming down are just so excited about changing their lives, about being around like-minded people. People want to learn about empowerment. They want to learn about sustainability. And some people just want to be able to walk away with, how can I change my daily routine given the kind of job I have so that I'm going to be able to live a healthier lifestyle? Some people are saying it's just so cold. They want to be in the warm weather. So whatever your reasons are, that it's wonderful. But I'm here to screen people to make sure that you're going to be around people that are like-minded, happy, enthusiastic, and really open to challenging their belief systems and learning information and just being in one of the most beautiful places in the world, in my opinion. And I've traveled the world. So if you're interested in coming down, give me a call. I am at 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198. We have been getting so many phone calls, so if you get my answering machine, no worries. I will get back to you within 48 hours.
And we only have room for four people. That's it. And because I don't want more than what I can work with, and you are going to be counseling people, and we're going to have all those, and artist therapy classes, and so we don't want to overdo it. But again, this is going to be what I'm hopeful will raise enough money for BAI to pay its transmitter bill so it doesn't have to do an emergency drive. So if this is successful, we bypass a mid-month emergency one-week fund drive, and that's our goal. And this way, at least, people will get your premium. You know, I'm hopeful that people in time will get all their premiums, but thus far, there's a whole lot of thousands of premiums out there that have not been delivered, and when money comes in, hopefully they will be. There's certainly enough volunteers and the enthusiasm to get them out, but this is one you will definitely get your premium because you're going to be there, and it, hopefully, like other people, it'll change your life, and especially if you're stressed, especially if you've got too many of the negative attitudes, and especially if you want to restart your life all over again, this is the place to do it. And it's only $2,000, and people are all donating your time. Lou Ampanesi's donating your time. John Q's donating. All these people are donating their times because they believe in the audience and they want to help the station. One last time on the phone number, Lou Ann.
Surely, 631-504-6198. 631-504-6198.
Thank you. And we look forward to sharing more on tomorrow's program. Have a nice day, everyone. Now, let's say hello to Matthew. Matthew, your turn.
Yeah, I have a quick question for you regarding the juicing. If I want to freeze my juices, do I lose any nutritional value?
No, you do not. There's been this myth that if you don't drink your juice within 7 minutes, it loses its hydrogen. Complete nonsense. You can freeze the juice. In fact, I recommend you juicing maybe one day a week, whatever is your most convenient day or evening, and then putting your juices in your freezer, but in bags, so the night before, you can put what you want to do the next day, and it'll thaw out overnight. So let's say you have a whole week's worth of juices frozen in your freezer, and then each evening you take out what you want the next day, put it in the fridge, it'll thaw enough, it'll be cold and nice, and that way you have it. So juice, freeze, store, and use. You won't lose any benefits, all right?
Thank you very much, Gary.
All the best, Matthew.
Thank you.
Let me also mention that for the big premiere coming, most of the showings are sold out. We do have some showings. I think two nights we have some seats left, and there are 35 showings. So normally we have one showing, so we got 35. They're almost all sold out. This is for the December 5th through the 11th, from noon until 9 at night. We have showings at 1 week. And this is on Poverty Inc., and what an important topic. Every single day, the issues of poverty become more pressing for so many Americans. It's time that you learned all about it, because I have over 60 pieces of the puzzle that are put in place and described in this very long document. It's an hour and 52 minutes. Normally, they're an hour and a half. So give a call to make your reservation to be there. Our number for reservations for the premiere, Poverty Inc., and I'll be at each of the evening's two showings, December 5th through the 11th, 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Today we're talking about immunity, the Ferguson prosecutor's Thanksgiving gift to Officer Darren Wilson.
Utrice Lead, right now.
Yeah.